Welcome to this 50th episode of the Hardware Asylum Podcast. In this episode, we bring you the Gigabyte Big XTU competition hosted on HardwareBot, and we talk about smartwatches bringing back time. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McKay. Darren, as you know, I am into a bit of overclocking.
No!
Yeah, a little bit. and I participate in a few overclocking competitions, most notably the MOA, and then there's a couple of minor ones that happen on HardwareBot throughout the year.
That's right, and you've been participating in others as a commentator and a color man, maybe?
Somewhat of an expert, I guess. I wouldn't call myself an expert, but you know, I know a few things.
A few. Well, is there a new competition?
There is, and this one is hosted by Gigabyte, who has famously not done the GOOC in several years.
Oh, and that was a classic.
That was like one of the first ones that kind of kicked off everything.
So what do we got? What's the new one?
We have the Big XTU Challenge from Gigabyte. It's based on the Z97 X99.
Oh, so new stuff, but what's XTU?
XTU is the Intel Extreme Tuning Utility.
That's not very exciting sounding.
No, not so much. But it's basically a self-contained application that Intel has developed to get the most out of X and K series processors.
So is this specific to the Z97 X99 series?
It was introduced during the Haswell era. So, you know, Z87, and it didn't work on X79, but basically the new Haswell and above. So it's going to work going forward.
Okay, so what is this Big XTU do?
The XTU it has a benchmark that's integrated with HardwareBot. That's why we have a competition on HardwareBot for that.
Nice.
So when it kind of like how FutureMark works, when you run a benchmark, you can submit your score to FutureMark, or you can do an offline copy and submit it to HardwareBot. Well, this XTU utility interfaces with HardwareBot to do the same thing. So you can get a ranking against other people in your hardware class. It also has a built-in overclocking utility, so you can run it on your system, and it will make changes to get the best performance based on your hardware.
Oh, so it's an optimizer, not just like a turbo button.
Yeah, that's the tuning utility part.
Oh, perfect. Okay. So I know different overclocking utilities target different types of overclocks. The XTU, is it a processor overclock?
Yeah, it's primarily 2D. So we're going to be doing processor and memory. And I'm not sure if it actually does subtimings and stuff like that, but any sort of real overclocking you do, you're going to do manually anyway. You're not going to let the tuning utility really kind of take over your system.
So the XTU would kind of give you a baseline, for example.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay, well, tell us about the competition.
Well, the competition, I should probably just go over to the rules page. So let me pull up the page real quick. General rules. We have four rounds. Round one is limited to Gigabyte Z97 motherboards and two core processors. So we're talking Pentium Anniversary Edition or Core i3s.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting niche.
Yeah. Round two is limited to X99 motherboards and six core processors.
Okay.
Round three is back to the Z97 motherboards and limited to four core processors. So you can basically do the Devil's Canyon and the previous 4770K Haswells. And then we also have the fourth round, final round, is X99 motherboards and 8-core processors.
So they want you to have a lot of hardware, it seems.
Well, a lot of Gigabyte hardware, along with a wide variety of processors. As we've seen, round one is 2-core processors, so we're talking Pentium Anniversary Edition or Core i3. Core i3, you're kind of limited in the overclockability because you can't adjust the multiplier.
It is finally justification for those cool anniversary edition processors, though.
Yeah, the $80 a pop processors, which is kind of nice. Then you go into X99 and you're doing 6-core. So this is going to be your K edition Core i7 processors.
I got one of those.
Well, not a 6-core that's on LGA 2011 V3.
That is true. That is kind of an odd niche now that I think about it.
Yeah, but that's a $500 proc. And then you go back to Z97. So we're going into Devil's Canyon territory. And then back into the X series Core i7, which is, you know, the processor I have.
And all of this is running, like on just, well, maybe 2 gigabyte boards you could make work.
Yeah, you could do this on 2 boards. the fifth rule is basically target submission will be open the first day, you know, at midnight plus 8 UTC, and closes last day, you know, at midnight plus 8 UTC. So we're doing the range from March 1st to April 29th.
No, so that's a pretty good range.
Yeah, 2 months. During the competition, there are 3 days that the target is available. Participants can submit as many individual scores as they want. No duplicate scores are allowed in the same round from the same participant.
Okay.
This is kind of important because the scores, you don't know what they are until...
Oh, wow. How did I miss that?
You can only use air and water cooling. Every submission must include competition background. That's pretty typical.
So now step back. This is air and water cooling only? How are they going to enforce that?
Basically, you take a picture of your overclocking rig. The idea is that you take a unique picture every time you submit a picture or submit a score. Nobody ever really does. You take one picture and just keep reusing it. But
yeah, well, that makes sense. Okay, so interesting.
And, you know, they say that it must be above 25 degrees Celsius. I don't think there is a requirement to have a thermometer in the picture, but it's kind of hard to judge. But basically, the idea is that anyone can do this competition using air and water.
All right. Well, that maybe widens it up a little bit since you have already tightened down the hardware requirements.
Mm-hmm. The Computex trip winner, because that's one of the prizes.
Ooh.
I didn't get to the prizes because I'm still reading the rules here. The only person that's eligible is somebody that submitted in all 4 rounds.
Okay, so you can win a trip to Computex. That's cool. And I see there's a lucky draw, so there must be a random draw.
Yeah, there's a random draw for hardware.
What else can you win?
$1,000. We'll get to the prizes here in a second. The last one, this is actually pretty important. It's except for elite overclockers, everyone is welcome to participate. So it excludes an entire group of overclockers as they're rated on HardwareBot.
I was going to say elite overclockers, those are overclockers that have submitted scores with below ambient scores or cooling, or how do they figure that out?
The elite overclockers are basically the people that are sponsored by manufacturers.
Oh, okay.
So we're talking our factory guys.
So your card-carrying professionals.
Yeah.
Sort of.
And it's a bit fuzzy because you have to elect to become an elite overclocker. I could probably apply because I get motherboards to review and video cards to review, which I turn around and overclock, but I don't necessarily do this as a full-on competition all the time, so I would always be ranked at the bottom.
So you've intrigued me with this no duplicate scores, how do you win thing?
Yeah, so that kind of gets into the competition space, but we'll do that after the prizes.
Okay, get to the prizes.
Yeah, so prize rules, you get a 3-day period to submit your scores. Submit any score within that window. Actual winning target is kept secret until after the submission period.
Oh, this is starting to sound very familiar.
Yeah, they had a reach the target competition earlier this last year, or late this last year. It got a lot of bad press because it was meet this score. Well, if you search through HardwareBot, you can find somebody that has a similar score and then tune your system to their specs to be able to try to reach it.
Interesting. I wouldn't have thought about that. That is a very clever way to, well, I don't know that I'd call it cheating, but to boost your odds.
Well, it removes a lot of the trial and error of the overclocking because somebody else already did it.
Now, not too far back, we talked about different overclocking competition ideas that we had. And one of those was the closest to the pin or closest to the mark score. And I remember postulating that it would be easy to come up with a spreadsheet if you were patient or had the resources.
Yeah, and it's a mathematical thing for the most part. So you could sit down and say, well, I have two systems. Well, if we go back to the closest of the pin, which isn't related to XTU in any rate, but if you had two systems that you were carrying with you to a live competition, you could sit down and map out how your hardware performs at what clock speeds, mm-hmm. and then create a spreadsheet from that. So when you get to the competition, they say, well, you need to have SuperPi of this time. You can look on your chart and figure out where you need to start.
Yeah, time-consuming, but not necessarily difficult.
No, but it's practice, just like in golf. You know, you're out on the course playing an 18-hole round in the morning, 18-hole round in the evening, and the idea is that you increase your score every time you go out and play. same thing here. You are practicing, you understand how your hardware works, you understand how the benchmark works, and how those two interact with each other.
Setting up, if nothing else, a minimum and a maximum range. So if the number falls between those two, you've already reduced the amount of time and effort required to narrow that down.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So they are keeping the target secret to prevent you from being able to do this.
Yeah, the idea is that you get 3 days to submit your scores. And if we go to the, let's do the prizes and then we'll get to the competition.
Oh, yeah, prizes. Gosh, it's not like me to skip ahead to the rules.
All right, so prizes. USD $1,000. The participant with the most points at the end of a round wins the cash prize. Tiebreakers are decided based on who submitted first.
So that's $1,000 each of the four rounds.
Right.
So the odds are pretty good depending on how many participants there are.
Just so we know, there's 10 stages per round. So there's a total of 10 points that you can get.
Oh, okay.
You also have a Gigabyte X99 SoC Champion motherboard. One lucky draw winner will be selected within each round.
Oh, I'd sure like to have one of those.
I don't know if it's a round winner, but it's basically lucky draw. So if you submit a score, you have a chance to win a motherboard.
Nice.
From what I can tell, there's no minimum, so you just have to submit one score. You could be totally not trying to compete in the competition.
Oh, that's nice, especially if you already have a system like that.
And you think about it, it's like, if you have a Z97, you submit a score to win an X99, that makes sense.
Yeah.
If you have an X99 and you submit a score to win an X99, doesn't make too much sense.
Well, it is the SoC Champion, though.
Yeah, it is the new board that is yet to be unreleased as of this recording.
But it's breaking records, so there is desirability there.
Yeah, breaking records using Gigabyte factory overclockers.
Well, somebody's got to do it, right? It's not on the market.
Yeah, so anyway, well, getting back to the prizes, we're sidetracking a lot here.
We are, because I'm excited about it.
Yeah, well, grand prize. This is the most exciting part. Computex 2015 trip.
Nice.
Gigabyte will fly you out to Computex to attend the show. Chances are they'll give you a factory tour, probably give you some prizes, maybe buy you dinner.
Heck yeah, you get a t-shirt out of the deal at least. And that's in Taipei, so that's a good trip.
Yeah, it's an awesome trip. You know, I've been there quite a bit. It looks like 5 nights, full schedule, round Computex 2015.
Very nice.
Yeah. Of course, you need to have your passport.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you have plenty of time at the end of the competition. But to be eligible for that prize, you have to compete in all four rounds.
If you have the hardware.
Yeah. And I think you have to actually win all four rounds. All right. So if we go to stage one right now, this one is actually closed as of this recording, but it's target 3-3.
Okay, so let's see, what were the hidden targets?
So the limitations were you tried to reach 300 marks, but not lower, and then you have to also be no higher than 340 marks. So the important thing to know here is that the target is within that range. So you have 40 marks that you have to hit.
So this is, this was the range that was released. So you knew that you needed to be between those two, you just didn't know where.
Didn't know where.
Okay.
By the looks of it, the target was 330 marks. So if you hit 330, then you get a point. And as you can see, we're scrolling down right now. There was a total of 10 people that hit that mark.
Nice.
If you go down here, you can also see some of the latest submissions. So we see a lot of people submitting 321, 307, 306, 319, 322, 320, 323. And these are all from the same person.
Oh, yeah. He's got a lot of time on his hands.
That's the danger of this particular competition. Is it's
7, 328, 313. Wow, look at him go.
It's a benching for the most part. So you basically sit down. You know that you have 40 marks, a range of 40 marks to hit. So you run it and you save it, run it, save it, run it, save it, changing, you know, micro adjustments in your base clock and changing memory frequencies just a little bit to adjust the score slightly.
So for $1,000, what's to stop you from having two or three machines that meet that criteria that you're submitting scores from?
Absolutely nothing except for your pocketbook.
Oh, fair enough.
The minimum here is like 40 submissions, right? Yeah, you know, if you go over 40, then you're submitting duplicates.
Right.
So you could have, say, 10 systems running, and you spread out the clocks across all those systems and basically start this one, start this one, start this one, and then do that 10 times and make all those adjustments and get your scores as long as you don't have any duplicates.
Wow, okay.
But that's just stage one Stage 2 is also closed as of this recording, and it was 220 marks low, 280 marks high.
Okay, so a 60 mark range and a lot lower.
And we had 10 people that got a point, and the target was 233.
Okay, yeah.
So not bad. And then it basically, it continues on. So stage 3 is, I believe, closed as of this, this recording. It was 490 by 530. We have a total of 5 people that hit that one.
So a little bit harder overclocking score to get, it looks like.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have 3.9 gigahertz to reach close to that. So, yeah, it's kind of pushing it. And then, right now, if we click over to stage 10, it opens soon. As you can see, there's no limitations. We don't have the score yet.
Now, roll back to the previous one, because I know we mentioned that was a little bit harder, and we didn't see as many people, but am I seeing right? There were only 5 participants in that round? Is that what it...
Right now, we're on the ocesports.io website, which is a little confusing to troll around on sometimes.
5 overclockers.
Oh, yeah, okay. In the big circle here.
Yeah, so... The harder marks, the 490 to 530 marks, had a much lower level of success.
Mm-hmm. So basically, if those 5 overclockers had already gotten points in the previous 2 stages, then they're up 3, whereas everybody else is at 2.
Oh, yeah. It's a tough gig.
Mm-hmm. And it's accumulation at this point. We have stage 4 waiting to come in. So it opens, as of this recording, in 12 hours, 12 days? 12 hours.
Well, I have to admit that it is definitely a unique way to handle an overclocking competition. And I am excited to see him trying something new.
It is new. And it's kind of like closest to the pin, but it happens over a 3-day period instead of, an hour. I don't necessarily like that you have to bench. You know, once you get your range, then you have to dedicate however long it takes to run that benchmark to get all those different scores to be guaranteed to get a point, or just kind of throw something out there and hope that the score that you submit is actually, kind of like Russian roulette, or not Russian roulette, that would be bad, like the roulette wheel. And, we have 60 points in between. That's pretty close to being able to pick one spot on the roulette wheel, but you can't do an outside bet of, well, I'm going to get all even or all odd.
One thing that you haven't mentioned is I don't see any scores from you.
Yes, that is because I did not compete in this one.
So thoughts on competing versus not competing? What kept you out?
What kept me out was the fact that they required a Z97 motherboard, which I have. I also have an X99 SoC Force motherboard, which I could have used, but I only have an 8-core processor. I don't have an anniversary edition, which cheap, mm-hmm. I could go buy one. I only have a 4-core, and I didn't elect to buy the 6-core 2011. So I'm short processors. While I also have Gigabyte hardware of the older generation, I have a 6-core on the X79. But you can't run XTU on X79. So I'm down hardware. So there was no reason for me to compete.
You're going to win potentially $4,000 if you swept it, yeah. Which is not very realistic. So you're really kind of looking at buying... $600 or $800 worth of hardware to compete for $1,000?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, pretty much.
That's assuming that you already have some of that laying around.
I'm most excited about the X99 sort of situation, but I have the X99 SoC Force. And if you'd been watching hardware or reading hardwareasylum.com, you might have seen a memory review that I did of some awesome Kingston DDR4 modules.
Oh, that's right.
I have right here, which are the Predator HyperXs. I'm going to say some of the fastest modules I've ever held in my hand.
Yeah, great looking modules too.
There was a big problem.
What's that? It seemed like you gave them great scores.
I did, but I had to use an EVGA motherboard to do the review.
Oh.
I pulled out the Gigabyte board thinking the SoC Force would be awesome.
Right.
I plugged the modules in. I booted the system. That's fine. I went to go enable XMP and it died.
Oh no.
I went and downloaded the latest BIOS because this is usually a BIOS problem. Applied it, and it didn't change it. I'm like, this isn't good, thinking I was having bad memory or bad processor or something.
Well, these are fairly new technologies, so you just wait for the new BIOS, right?
Right. Unfortunately, when I switched over to the EVGA X99 Classified to do the review, I posted a picture on the Hardware Sign Facebook page with a little caption saying, guess which board will not DDR4 300 megahertz memory and which one won't. And Dinos, one of the technical marketers for Gigabyte, said, hey, that board's end of life, dude. I'm like, great.
Already?
Already, because they have the Champion coming out. It's not out yet. Which brings up an interesting point that the SoC Force has only been out 6 months as of this recording, 6 or 7 months.
That's fast.
It's already end of life, and the replacement for it isn't available.
So you would think that they would still be supporting the board, at least through the new one.
Well, I would expect support until the next chip comes out.
Yeah. These are not exactly limited edition boards.
No, they made a whole bunch of them. So I'm a little disappointed, you know, slap on the wrist to Gigabyte here. You know, I understand that they have a lot, and we've talked about this before, they have a large portfolio of motherboards.
Yes.
And it's somewhat unrealistic that they would keep every single one of them up to date, you know, because some of them are business boards, which are default configurations. Some of them are retail boards. And those are the ones that they're in the hands of you and I. And what's to stop us from going and buying faster memory to get better performance?
Well, yeah, especially as new as the DDR4 is. Well, even the chipset. So you're definitely, you know, not wanting to get locked into your early adapter memory if more faster or efficient memory is out.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So it brings up an interesting point that I wouldn't have been able to compete in the XTU challenge using this really super awesome Predator memory. I would have had to use some Corsair stuff.
Oh, no. We like our HyperX memory, but it's definitely a hassle. We got memory in hand. That just adds to the cost of competing and creates a tremendous amount of frustration.
Overall, you know, I probably would have competed in this particular competition. I liked the format. I didn't like the fact that I would have had to buy hardware to compete in all four rounds, because if you're going to enter, you might as well do all four. The cash prizes were kind of a great draw. I looked at that. Winning a X99 motherboard. Hey, I love winning motherboards. I love motherboards. Not necessarily that I need it. The Computex trip was really interesting to me.
Yeah, that's a great prize.
Yeah, I go every year anyway, so getting a free trip just kind of puts more money in my pocket. But I would have liked to see somebody else actually win that one. But, you know, kind of compete to have fun. That's what I would be after.
So an interesting competition. And even more interesting, the forced obsolescence of the HyperX Predator memory, at least from the Gigabyte SoC Force standpoint. Well, we'll have to check back in on this competition and see where it ends up. And we'll get you up to date and in the later podcast. We haven't talked much on this podcast yet about the big milestone that we've reached on this podcast that we hinted at in the last podcast. And that makes this podcast very special. And that is...
Podcast? No, wait a minute. We are talking about episode number 50.
So episode 50, that's right. Dennis and I have been doing this podcast faithfully for more than 50 episodes. And we say that because we've had some specials. And of course, we started doing extras a couple of years back, which doubles up most months.
Yeah, well, with the total of the extras, I think we're at 70 right now.
Wow, that's a lot of podcasts and a lot of time to spend in a room together on these microphones.
Mm-hmm.
But
if you think about it, that's 50 months.
Wow, that's crazy.
I know.
So we're glad for the success we've had and the growth that we're seeing in the open market. But being as this is the 50th episode, I thought it might be fun to do something a little different. No, it's not game talk.
Not game talk.
And no, we're not going to pour liquid nitrogen on each other.
That'd be kind of fun.
Are we?
No.
And that is something new, exciting, and maybe a little bit enthusiast or cutting edge, and that is smartwatches.
Smartwatches. This is kind of like back in the 80s when we had that calculator watch that was really cool.
Kind of.
Well, do tell. I have a watch in hand right now, and the face on this looks amazingly flat, not very three-dimensional, and it's
so a little bit about cool. Smartwatches. This is not the first time that smartwatches have come out, or even the earliest smartwatch design, but what I've got here to share and to talk about is an LG G Watch R, which is one of the latest Android Wear supported smartwatches to hit the market.
And it's big. It's like a regular sports watch size.
That's right. In fact, this is maybe not the largest watch, but it is one of the larger round-faced watches. And the round face is actually what attracted me to it in the first place, and primarily because it avoids looking like those silly calculator watches. And I know that there are a lot, I mean, there really are a lot of watches out there in the Android and Apple now.
Yeah, the one that I'm most familiar with is there's two Samsung watches. There's one that has a mm-hmm. big square face, and then there's a one's kind of looks like a bracelet, really. It's kind of thin.
Yeah, this whole market for smart interactive wear has really taken off over the last year, and there are a lot of folks that still think that maybe it's too soon. So the fact that I have one of these in hand gives us an opportunity to take kind of a look at it and discuss not only the LG Watch R itself, but also the whole concept of what a smartwatch is right now.
Okay. Well, let's start with the specs.
Okay. So this is, like I mentioned, one of the latest watches. It is one of the very few round face watches out there. Its primary competitor is the Motorola 360 watch, which is a beautiful watch, and it's a little bit smaller.
Yeah, so processor?
This one has the Qualcomm Snapdragon processor. It's a 1.2 gigahertz processor.
Wow, so just like a phone.
That beautiful screen that you are looking at there is about 1.3 inches, and it's a POLED. And one of the reasons that I like this one over the Motorola unit is that the entire screen, every inch of that round face, is screen. Whereas on the Motorola 360, mm-hmm. There is what some people refer to as a flat tire. It's a little section down at the bottom that is taken up with a sensor and is not a screen. So it's not a full round watch. And to me, that takes you out of the illusion that it's a real watch because there's that little cutout down at the bottom.
Yeah. Well, and I noticed that on the side, there's a, it looks like one of those old school mm-hmm. things to wind it.
Yeah, that's called the crown, and it's very intentional that it looks like that. In fact, that's just a simple buzzer, but that whole screen, the POLED, is a touchscreen. And it's pretty sensitive. In fact, the watch face design that you're looking at now has specific touch areas that activate. For example, you could tap on the weather and it would activate a weather update, or you can tap to activate the chrono, or you can go into the different menus.
Yeah, I just brought in the menus, and the first thing says, speak now, which is an Android thing.
So let's talk a little bit more about some of the features of this particular smartwatch and many smartwatches in general. One of the most common things that you see in these is a heart rate monitor, and that is because the Android Wear, the self-wear, Fitbit, Nike, everybody has one, is to tie these in and let you kind of monitor your workout routine.
Yeah, a little biometric stuff. And I saw something about a how many steps did I take?
Yeah, it also has a barometer, measures your steps. Mm-hmm. It has a 9-axis monitor for motion, so it does some interesting motion things. This one also will do a compass, I believe. One of the important things that people always ask me about it is about the battery, because this is the Achilles heel of smartwatches. This is not the largest smartwatch out there, but it has a 410 mAh battery. If you're familiar with batteries just in general, especially from the smartphone market, that's probably not a very impressive number.
No, that's like maybe an hour?
No, it's terrible. It's not an hour, but what I'm finding is, and this is something that's been echoed a lot about this particular watch, is you can get with fairly regular use, and that means that I'm using a fair amount of the features actively, is that you get about a day and a half of battery life out of it, which is not impressive. Well, it just isn't.
No, but when you get home, it has a dock, basically.
That's right. And in fact, to compare it to its most closest competitor, the 360, it gets about a half a day more watch. And that's important to note. If you run bare minimum, you could stretch it to almost a full day. But then you take all the fun and advantages of what a smartwatch is out.
Yeah.
I should also mention that it has a voice activation. It has the OK Google, and it does some fun stuff that we can talk about in a minute. But last but not least, it is water and dust resistant. It's an IP67, which I'm told is about 30 feet.
Yeah.
And it's that's probably being a little bit generous. In short, it's designed to absorb sweat, light rain, that sort of thing. But it's not going to be a diver's watch. It's never going to be. If you look at the back of it,
yeah, you'll see. Open.
It's got, you know, it's got tactile sensors to set it on the dock. So like the LG, you just take this puppy home. At the end of the day, you set it on a little watch. This one takes about an hour to charge on an average day.
Well, and speaking of watch itself, on the back, you know, I can see the sensors. I can see the charge points and the data points, you know, so you can get data on and off of it.
Yes.
Which is probably also Bluetooth connected to your phone.
It's totally Bluetooth. In fact, those little data things are not docking right now for me in any way. I haven't used it that way. So it does have a USB plug-in style format for the little docking station.
Well, the one thing that I have noticed is that you have a nice leather, actual real leather band on
this. Yes. In fact, the other big strength of this G-Watch R over its competition is that it uses a standard watch band attachment. Mm-hmm. So you can take any, I believe it's 22 mil, which is a very standard watch band,
yep,
on the open market and replace it. So metal, stainless steel, leather. And the big disadvantage of a lot of the smartwatches is they come with little chintzy, cheap plastic adapters that break. So your smartwatch isn't so smart when it isn't a watch anymore because it doesn't have a band. And this is something that was also a complaint about the 360 unit. So, yeah, that's a lot about the hardware, but let's
talk about apps.
Apps. Well, yeah.
What does it do? I mean, I saw a really cool face on here.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, it's picking up that we're talking. It wants me to talk to the watch.
One of the interesting things about the watch in its default mode, if you raise the watch, like change its elevation or its orientation, like you're moving it towards your face, it pops up in the voice activation, and on the screen it says, "Okay, Google," to prompt you for a voice command. And it will interface with your phone through Android Wear, and it acts as an extension of a lot of things that your phone does so that you can do it hands-free. Now, the biggest downside of this is that there's no speaker on the watch at all, which kind of makes sense with the whole water-resistant thing.
Yeah.
But that means that you can't actually use it as a watch phone. So you still need some sort of Bluetooth device to answer your phone hands-free, but you can use it to answer your phone.
Well, yeah, you can see that you got a call, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you can say Dick Tracy phone and whatever, and then it goes to your Bluetooth in your
That's
ear.
That's exactly right. And you can voice call just like you would with the OK Google on your phone. You can say, you know, call home or whatever, and if it finds it in your address book, it will dial it and fire up all of your hands-free stuff. Now, it also does the step monitoring that we've already talked about. That's something that I use as I've been trying to get more active. And, you know, I think that a lot of people are going to find that attractive. But it will show you also when your voicemails come in, your text messages come in, your emails come in with a little alert screen at the bottom, and you can scroll or respond to those with some simple voice text, also using the really good Google voice translation.
Right. So no Angry Birds on this, no real games, right?
It does have games, but right now they're not impressive, so not impressive that I haven't installed any. In fact, I've looked at a lot of the apps out there, and I'm just not nerdy enough that I need my watch to do too much more than those things that we've already talked about. My favorite thing to do with the watch is to use a third-party software. There are two competitors, Facer and Watchmaker, and you install them on your phone or your Android device, pair them with the watch through Bluetooth, and you can download and install custom faces for your watch.
Hmm.
So I love that. I have probably a dozen watches that I just kind of wear on a whim, but I've always wanted to have all these really expensive watches. I mean, who doesn't want to have the Rolex Submariner that James Bond wears, or, you know, the Perlet or whatever, the Piat from Focus. I mean, you know, some people know about all these big fancy watches, not just the Rolexes and the like, but you can go out on the open market or you can make yourself these faces. You can add whatever functionality. I mean, there's battery, there's weather, there's event alerts. You can make it monitor your phone's battery. Mm-hmm. You can do multiple time zones, dates. I mean, anything that you can imagine that a watch does. It will even emulate through some really awesome graphics that are out there, skeleton watches. So you can see, or at least see what could have been, how the inside of your watch would work if it was a real watch.
Wow.
And so what I've done is I've gone out to these different things through Google Plus. There are some support sites, and I've downloaded some Tag Heuer watches, some Rolexes, Porsche design, Ferrari. I mean, anything that crosses your fancy, you can go out there and look for that watch face. It takes literally about 10 seconds to download and install that watch face onto your watch. Now you have a beautiful watch that looks just exactly like that, with the nice added advantage of the touchscreen and the glow in the dark.
Cool. So you kind of touched on, you can install custom apps on this, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I saw I could play music.
Yes.
So I'm guessing it will also have some of an interface where I can play music through my, probably go back to the phone and play the music there. Or play
yes, that's correct. And if you have that interfaced with a Bluetooth stereo in your car or whatever, it will launch.
Mm-hmm. So far, it sounds a lot like this watch here, this smart watch, is a lot smarter than the Samsung one, where it says it does like five things, which I'm sure it does more than that, but it doesn't advertise that it does more than that.
Well, that's true. And a lot of it is because the Android Wear operating system that controls it from your other device is really pretty new still. And so the applications that are out, it's all sort of early adapter still.
Yeah. Well, that's the enthusiast market for you. Speaking of enthusiast market, you know, back when PDA phones were like the thing, right?
Right.
And you get those slider phones. They were really thick and kind of heavy. You couldn't really put them anywhere except in their custom case. I've noticed that this watch is a good probably centimeter thick, half an inch or so. So it's kind of, it's got some height to it. And it has a little bit of weight, but it isn't overtly heavy.
No, it's not too bad. Well, you probably have noticed that the trend in general in watches right now is that watches are larger.
Yeah, they're getting bigger.
And so this is a what I would say is maybe a medium-sized watch in the market. I believe this is a 22-millimeter face. And I'd have to look that up, so don't quote me. But this is not the largest watch I own, which is interesting because I am not a huge guy.
Yeah.
So initially I was a little put off by the size, but when I compared it to other watches in my collection, it turns out that it's right in the middle.
I suppose we could probably blame Flavor Flav for some of that, right?
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about what else is coming on the market. So maybe you don't want the LG G Watch R.
Right, because we have a fancy Kickstarter that's still going as of this podcast that's raised $16 million.
One of the largest Kickstarters in the history of Kickstarter, and we've talked a lot about Kickstarter.
Well, you like Kickstarter.
I like Kickstarter, and it's kind of fun to keep an eye on, was the Pebble Watch. So if you're even remotely interested in smartwatches, you've got to know the Pebble Watch came out not too long ago, and they sold just a bazillion of these things. Well, right now, the Pebble Watch 2 is available on Kickstarter, and it is on task to maybe be the largest ever Kickstarter. In fact, we're looking at it right now. There are 18 days to go as of the day this recording happened, so you might still be able to get in on it. You should by the time this is posted.
Yeah, we got 66,000 backers and a total of $16.9 million pledged out of a $500,000 goal.
Heck yeah, that means that there are almost 67,000 people that want one of these smartwatches. And the Pebble is doing something different. It is using colored e-paper. Remember that from the e-readers?
Yep.
And what it's doing is it's discovered that it's not going to be probably quite as fancy a screen. They don't claim it's going to be as on the G-Watch R. But what it is going to do is give you an incredible 7 days of battery life.
Yeah, well, and some of that, all of the battery life is really powering the screen for the most part, and the backlight, making sure things are lit up.
Well, and some of the constant communication with the device.
Right. And with the Pebble, I watched the introduction video for it. It doesn't do a lot in terms of, it gives you all your life notes. So it gives you your calendar, what's coming up next. It tells you when the phone's going to ring. It gives you the time, obviously. So it gives you all of these basic features and a nice little swipe style interface.
Well, and it's important to note that the Pebble, much like the first generation Pebble, and I see this isn't actually called the Pebble 2 officially, it's called a Pebble Time.
Yeah.
But it uses the square screen, which is also cheaper and easier to program for. So compare that with that e-paper, and you're going to be able to get a really a pretty solid, what I would consider functional watch. Not all the bells and whistles of the Android Wear, but Oh, this says up to 10 days of battery life. Wow. And you're going to get a lot of the advantages that we've talked about with this one. The premium bands will work and the whole nine yards. You're going to be able to customize the face.
You can talk to it.
Yeah. So it's an able competitor. And to back it, Dennis, how much would you have to pay to get one of these things? Just to put it in perspective.
Okay. So if we look at the top pledge, which is actually all gone right now, that mm-hmm. was $169. They had 10,000 backers for that. Early bird, your choice of one pebble time watch and any of the three colors available.
So it looks like you could get one of these for $179
yeah.
is where it starts.
The retail price for this is $200.
Yeah, which is not bad. And of course, much like the Pebble right now, you can get the original Pebble if you're looking for under $100. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing really to prevent you from getting one of these to play with. But the market is still really new. So
yeah, I mean, these 67,000 backers might be the only people that ever buy one.
That's true. And who knows, by the time that this is delivered, because Kickstarter does have a tendency to sometimes take over a year to deliver, mm-hmm. who knows what the next great thing will be. I might think that this G-Watch R is an antique by then.
Yeah, that's true. Well, either way, smartwatch or not, I mean, I haven't worn a watch since, I want to say high school or even right. before that, but you know, when I was looking for time, I was in my car all the time. So I had a big custom stereo, as we've talked about before.
Right.
So I'd have time on that, and that's how I got around. And then before that, I had a pager, and then I got cell phone. I was an early adapter on a mobile phone, so I had time on that all the time. I never needed a watch. I'm almost thinking it might be time to start wearing one again.
Well, I have to agree that especially with the younger generation, everybody's got a cell phone. So the need for a watch has really been marginalized. So bringing watch functionality and the ability to monitor your phone without having to take your phone out of your pocket is really kind of bridging the gap. And that's what got me interested in the first place. Don't miss a call when it vibrates on your arm, and I can glance right away to see if I even need to interact. And that was enough to push me over. So maybe it's enough for you too. We'll have to see.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Google or like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2015. Thanks for listening.